call the regularly scheduled meeting of the New Jersey Highlands Council to session. Roll call, please.
Kurt Olson.
Here.
Tracy Carluccio.
Here.
Timothy Doherty. Michael Dressler.
Here.
Michael Francis.
Here.
Robert Holtzman.
Here.
Bruce James.
Here.
Carl Richbeck.
Here.
Jim Riley. Michael Sevitin.
Here.
Michael T. Fang.
Here.
James Vizioli.
Here.
Richard Bowden.
Here.
Robert Walton.
Here.
Tim Doherty may be on the phone. Oh, okay. Tim Doherty?
Right now.
Tim Doherty?
Melissa for Tim. A reading of the Open Public Meetings Act, please.
This meeting is being held in accordance with the Open Public Meetings Act. The Highlands Council sent written notice of the time, date, and location of this meeting to newspapers of circulation throughout the state and posted notice on the Highlands Council website.
Okay, all rise for the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I'd like to just pause and take a moment to have a moment of silence in memory of recently slain police officers and also in memory of our attorney's mother who just passed away. So, moment, please. Entertain a motion to approve the minutes of the April 21st, 2016 meeting.
So moved. A second, Mr. Chairman.
Yes. Was that a second, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Yeah, not a comment, please follow. Are there any comments on the minutes? Changes? Please. If not, roll call.
Councilmember Alston.
Yes.
Councilmember Carluccio.
Yes.
Councilmember Doherty.
Yes.
Councilmember Dressler.
Yes.
Councilmember Francis.
Yes.
Councilmember Holtzman.
Aye.
Councilmember James.
Abstain.
Councilmember Richko.
Yes.
Councilmember Sevitin.
Yes.
Councilmember T. Fang.
Yes.
Councilmember Vizioli.
Yes.
Councilmember Bowden.
Yes.
Councilmember Walton.
Yes.
Chairman Riley.
Motion is carried. Chairman's report's next. Obviously, Chairman Riley is absent today, and if I'm not mistaken, it's his first absence as chairman.
It's
the first time that I've had to do this, and I've been his chair, vice chairman the entire time. So,
can we dock him?
It speaks highly of Jim's dedication, the fact that all these years, this is his first absence from a meeting. I'm going to defer directly to our executive director, and if you would please proceed with the report, unless any other council members have something they want to report out on first.
Okay, I have just a thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have a few things I'd like to highlight in the executive director's report. While we weren't holding meetings, you got reports every month anyway, which I will continue to do. I hope it's helpful to you. The new report that you have in front of you for petition approvals. Today we are hearing the petition of Chester Borough, which we're very happy about. It's completely in the planning area. Mayor Hoven is here with some of her staff. We're delighted to have you here. For plan conformance implementation, Clinton Township and Hunterdon County came in with a master plan reexamination report and resolution, which were adopted and deemed consistent. The municipality also adopted a checklist ordinance, which was deemed consistent, and an exemption determination authorization, which was deemed consistent, and certificates were issued. On the next item down, we've already had our first consistency determination review for Clinton Township, which was the Exxon Research and Engineering Expansion. On the TDR program and HDC Bank activities, we had, for the HDC Bank credit allocation and purchase update, 18 applications were received, 10 applications were for the bank purchase of previously allocated HDCs, and 8 new applications for allocation and bank purchase were received. And this represents a continuation of interest in our brand new open space program. At the close of receiving applications for the HDC portion of our program, we have 69 applications in hand for a total of $16 million. The open space applications are still expected. The closing date for that is September 15th, and we know for sure that we'll have some more coming in there too. So there's a lot of interest in this. I'm excited about it. I hope you guys are excited about it because it's a big step forward for us as an agency. For municipally issued exemptions, Montville Township issued one exemption 4, Washington Township, Warren County issued one exemption 5, and Califon Borough 108 also issued one exemption 5. I know some of you have been asking about the land preservation status report that is done. It is posted on our website, and you have a hard copy in your packet. One other thing, which I know the council knows about, members of the public may not, this is Chris Dennis's last meeting. She is going to off to pursue a PhD in public policy. So we are very sad for us, but extremely happy for her because I know it's an opportunity she's wanted for a long time. I will say that, you know, for myself, I will miss her terribly. She has been an incredible asset to our organization. So I would ask you to join with me in thanking her.
Resolution for Chester Borough. Do we want to do the presentation first before we open up the resolution?
Either way is fine.
Why don't we start with the presentation and okay. Then we'll introduce the resolution.
And I will turn it over to Corey.
And just if I may, just for matter of disclosure, I do own property in Chester Borough that's permanently preserved farmland, 5.87 acres. I reviewed this with our council and I'm not in conflict in acting on behalf for voting in this matter today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let's just get right into it. Chester Borough, just to give you a little background, was incorporated in 1930 and has an area of over 1,000 acres lying solely within the planning area. The borough first petitioned the council for plan conformance in December of 2008. It's notable that Chester Borough first sought separation from Chester Township because development had led to water supply problems that made the need for a public water system. Chester Borough is bisected by routes 206 and 513. At the intersection of these two roads lies the old Larison's Turkey Farm, a landmark for anyone that has passed through Chester. The main house on the Turkey Farm is the Isaac Corwin House is registered under the Historic American Buildings Survey that was completed as part of a make-work program during the Great Depression. As you can see from this slide, Chester Borough lies wholly within the planning area and is largely surrounded by preservation area. The borough has also made significant progress in preserving several large tracts of land, as well as some parks within the downtown area of the borough. The land use capability zone map of Chester Borough indicates that the borough is largely within the existing community zone, with pockets of protection zone and in existing community environmentally constrained zone, as well as conservation zones. And as I had mentioned before, you can see here there are many historic, cultural, and archaeological resources that the Highlands recognizes within Chester Borough, and the borough has taken great effort in acknowledging those resources in their planning documents. A public comment period was held regarding Chester Borough's petition for plan conformance from June 17th through July 5th. Five comments were received regarding Chester Borough's petition for plan conformance. One comment was received by New Jersey DOT with no objection to the borough's petition. All comments are fully summarized and responded to in the final consistency review recommendation report, which was posted on our website prior to this meeting and is available on the table out front as well as in council member packets. As with all petitions for plan conformance, the borough has an implementation plan and schedule that includes funding for a sustainable economic development plan, a historic preservation plan, a stormwater management plan, and a wastewater management plan, among other items. The full implementation plan and schedule is included in members' packets, available on the table out front, as well as on our website. The staff recommendation for the borough's petition for plan conformance is that the petition is approved with conditions. Those conditions include adoption of a council-approved planning area petition ordinance, an interim checklist ordinance, the Highlands Environmental Resource Inventory, the Highlands Master Plan element, the Highlands Land Use Ordinance, which will replace the interim checklist ordinance once adopted, the Housing Element and Fair Share Plan, a wastewater management plan, and finally, adherence to the implementation plan and schedule as previously discussed. And that concludes my presentation of Chester Borough's petition for plan conformance.
Mayor Hogan, I know you're here. Do you want to introduce the guest that you brought with you today to the council?
I'd be happy to. Thank you very much for hearing our petition this afternoon. I bring with me two councilwomen, Karen Barone and Jennifer Cooper, along with our planner, Dave Vanish.
Thank you. Appreciate you coming out. At this time, I think we'll entertain a motion to approve the resolution, and then we'll open up for discussion.
Second.
Okay. Resolution's been offered as a motion and seconded. We'll open for discussion.
I'm best if I can say. What's the event for Chester Borough to comply with the Highlands Act that is Highland Pioneer?
So, Chester Borough has some unique issues, one of which being their wastewater issue. They have a series of failing septics and cesspools within the borough. There are restaurants on the main street that require, that are unable to use regular dishware. They have to use plastic, styrofoam, whatever, because they don't have access to the sewer system as necessary. So the Highlands Council will assist the borough in getting through DEP to utilize some innovative wastewater treatment technologies that to enable expansion of the system beyond what is already there. So, I mean, that's one of it. The other thing is obviously funding to complete a lot of the planning work.
Okay. So it's sort of, you've heard the expression welfare for planners, and this is not that, but it's sort of, they don't have the resources to fund these things themselves, or they prefer to fund, to have funder funding these things rather than doing it on their own.
Well, I would just say that the Highlands Council is not funding the, particularly on the wastewater, and we're not building a treatment plant for them.
We're planning on it.
We're helping with the feasibility, and a lot of that quote unquote funding is going to come from in-house expertise and interagency coordination and training.
And what's the trade-off? What do they lose?
Nothing. Not in the borough.
All right, can you put up those conditions again on the screen?
Sure. Is this one?
Was there any discussion on the housing element and fair share plan?
So there have been discussions, but as you know, that's currently being litigated by the courts. And so the implementation plan and schedule provides funding for the borough to update their fair share housing plan. Once the courts make their decision, and the council will assist the borough in abiding by the court's decision.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question.
Please.
So in the implementation and the funding for implementation of the plan, according to your slide, historic preservation, stormwater management, as well as sustainable economic development planning will also be a benefit to the borough?
Yes.
Thank you.
Any other comments? Anybody else from staff? We'll open it to the public. Public portion, 3 minutes per person, please, with comments strictly limited to this resolution. I recognize the gentleman who stood up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Henry Kent Smith. I represent the Turkey Farm folks who own Larison's Turkey Farm and the property next to it, which is called Bill Ridge Lane. And quite frankly, I'm stunned that we're going to rubber stamp a plan that's going to guarantee continued pollution of groundwater in this island. I mean, it's stunning that this council is going to adopt a plan that's going to allow septic failures to continue and going to ignore innovative technology that exists today that's in use in Chester right now that treats all nitrates through a membrane technology, eliminates all the nitrates, allowing infiltration of absolutely clean water. You can drink it except for the bio bugs in there, and you UV it, you're done, you can drink the water. Inject that back into the aquifer to replenish the aquifer. My client has proposed, and we will build as big a plant as this borough needs in order to address their sewer failures. You're not going to correct this problem with failed septics by building new septics. There's only one way you fix this problem. You connect these failed septics to a public sewer system. Now, the problem is the public sewer system isn't capable without a huge amount of public money. Public money, if we're going to go this route. Taxpayer dollars to try to upgrade a sewer plant that may take years. My client, a private landowner, will fund this ourselves. Not 1 cent of taxpayer dollars need be used to correct in part this problem, or if the borough wants, in its entirety, because we can build up 100,000-gallon plant if it's necessary, in order to provide additional sewer treatment capacity. Now, what does that do? That allows this borough to get rid of the failed septic systems, hook people up to public sewer, and start eliminating the problem that exists right now. And you know what the real added benefit is? We recharge the aquifer. Why? Because when we re-inject the water back through the system, and this is how it works, you literally dump the water into the stormwater basin. Stormwater basin is designed to infiltrate. You infiltrate through the stormwater system. It is a brilliant technology. It's there. It's in use. And it's only getting better. It's only getting cheaper. You know, it's just stunning to me that the council is going to simply rubber stamp a plan, have taxpayer dollars utilized to create a study when private development interests are ready to help this borough solve its problem right now. And we can do so in conformity with your plan. In part because this borough has presented a plan, and I was a little taken aback. If you could please put the open space inventory slide up.
You're running out of time.
I know. I just want to show you one thing. The open space inventory neglects the 42 acres that my client has permanently dedicated as open space. It's not shown on it. And we've already given that land for permanent preservation as open space. And it's not shown on that inventory. It is stunning to me that the council would approve such a plan.
Thank you. Other comments?
Yes, sir.
Just state your name for the record, please.
My name is Sean Gilson. I'm representing the New Jersey Highlands Coalition. The New Jersey Highlands Coalition supports Chester Borough's petition for plan conformance. We applaud the borough for the decision to adopt the best possible planning objectives for the benefit of the entire community by conforming its planning area and we recognize the hard work of its professionals and elected officials in rewriting its master plan to become consistent with the regional plan. We encourage the council to approve their petition. We support the proposed housing element and fair share plan component that is responsive to available water and wastewater capacity and developed with criteria to ensure the future vitality of the entire community. By limiting future growth, including the housing needs of all income levels, to the existing community zone, where supporting infrastructure exists, the local and regional values embodied in the borough's natural resources and local ecosystems are maintained. We support the Chester Borough Environmental Resource Inventory, as it is based on the Highlands Model ERI, provided by the Highlands Council. The Chester Borough Conformance Petition is consistent with all mandatory master plan Highlands elements and is well supported by the provided maps and exhibits. And we thank the Highlands Council for this opportunity to submit comments today.
Thank you. Anybody else? Hey. Don't forget to tell us who you are.
My name's Hank Klump. I'm a farmer, and I'm just sitting here listening to what Corey presented here. And, this is in the planning area. To me, and I'm kind of a simple guy, I think this should be in a preservation area so nothing else can be developed there. I mean, this makes sense to me. I mean, if you want to stop developing, you put it in a preservation area. I mean, and you're spending more money on this whole thing. I don't know. Is it council giving these people a grant? What is the council going to do here? Or are you just approving something? Question.
Well, Hank, you know it's our policy not to do today.
Yeah, okay. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you. Other comments? Yes.
My name is Wilma Fry. I'm Senior Policy Manager for New Jersey Conservation Foundation. New Jersey Conservation Foundation is pleased to support the Borough of Chester's petition for plan conformance. We've noted that the borough lies within two HUB 14 watersheds that are in deficit. They are in rather strong deficit. We therefore support the borough's recognition that the availability of water for human use is a critical factor in determining the capacity for growth and continued economic vitality in the borough. The water supply issue is equally, if not more important, than the septic sewer issue. The availability of water for ecological purposes is critical to sustaining the aquatic ecosystems of streams, ponds, and lakes. And of particular concern to this borough is the potential for overuse of water to reduce base flows, impair ecological function and integrity, and reduce the reliability of potable water that the municipality depends on. We're also pleased, we're very pleased that the borough recognizes these issues and that they are applying for plan conformance so that these issues can be addressed in a thoughtful manner. We're also pleased that the plan recognizes the historic, cultural, and archaeological resources of the borough and that they form an essential priority component of the borough's character and aesthetic quality. We strongly support these aspects of the plan, the historic, cultural, and archaeological preservation aspects. We're also very pleased that this borough intends to actually protect scenic resources. I've been working on this for a long time, and we need to have some progress made beyond the ones that are currently in the inventory. And we like the idea of their potentially nominating some scenic roads for inclusion in the scenic resources inventory. Thank you for the opportunity to comment. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else from the public? Yes, please.
Yes, good afternoon. Monique Purcell, Department of Agriculture. I was just a little confused. I assumed that part of this petition under the wastewater plan would be to obviously look into a way to address the failing septics, and it sounds like the alternative treatment system this gentleman was talking about would make a lot of sense, so I'm a little confused about this being at odds. To be honest with you, I didn't spend a whole lot on the petition because I figured it was pretty much a slam dunk, but I'm a little confused by the wastewater issue.
Okay. I think what I'd like to do, since you're representing an agency, is we'll address that at the completion of public comments.
Okay, just want to go on record about being confused.
Yes. Anybody else in the public? Mayor Hovind, would you like to make some comments on behalf of the borough?
Thank you for having us here. I think our petition speaks for itself. We address all of the issues in our petition. If anyone has questions, I'd be happy to ask them, but at this point I'm going to let the petition stand for itself.
Thank you very much. Did the planner want to make some remarks?
The borough really welcomes this opportunity to work with the Highlands Council's planning staff in coordinating local economic development and environmental protection with the Highlands Regional Master Plan and the very serious care and capacity work that's been done in preparing the Regional Master Plan. Justin Borough looks forward to coordinating local plans on a going forward basis with the natural capacity of the land to sustain development, and sustainable development will be the watchword on a going forward basis. Chester Borough also welcomes the opportunity to work with the Highlands Council planning staff on solving its wastewater management issues. Well, some comments have been made this afternoon as though there's a silver bullet out there. Insofar as the borough is aware, there is actually no capacity being offered by that property owner that would solve Chester Borough's wastewater management planning issues, and therefore the borough really does look forward to this cooperative planning effort with the Highlands Council staff and, of course, the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection in solving that particular very important problem. And so the borough welcomes the opportunity to work with the council, and we look forward to the council approving the petition this afternoon. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, did you want to just elaborate any further?
Yeah, one more.
Would you like to speak on behalf of the public?
Close up the third one. First.
Did you want to speak on behalf of the public?
Yes.
Mr. Schoen, the floor is yours.
My name is David Schoen. I have a forum in the preservation area. Having attended these meetings essentially from the beginning, I have developed a healthy dose of cynicism. And I have to wonder if tying the wastewater management plans of problems that Chester Borough seems to have admitted to the fair share housing obligation may be in fact connected. If you don't have septic capacity, you don't have an obligation for low and middle income housing opportunities. I think this is just another way of avoiding what used to be called COA. Thank you.
Thank you. Final call for public comments? None. We'll close the public comment portion. Margaret, did you want to elaborate any further?
No, I have a feeling that the confusion has been cleared up. I saw a little sidebar going on over there. But in terms of the wastewater treatment thing, this is really very important to Chester Borough to resolve. It's kind of on the same level as the problems that Califon is facing and lots of little towns all over the Highlands where they've really kind of grown beyond their capacity to deal with wastewater in as effective as a matter as they would like. We look forward to working with them. We've already reached out to the DEP to start preliminary discussions on how they can upgrade their system. Those conversations were extremely, I think, helpful. I think we will be able to pull something together with the DEP's help to solve their problems, just as we are working with Califon to do the same thing.
Thank you. Yeah, let me just, as the Department of Agriculture's question to answer.
Somewhat, yes, thank you.
Somewhat? Do you need more?
No, I'm good.
Okay. Member comments?
Is there a sewer service area there now?
There is presently a sewer service area in the borough. Are you, when you say there, what can you clarify?
Other than the where in the borough, I guess, is the sewer service area? Just along Main Street? Or?
So there are several wastewater treatment facilities that are subject to New Gypsy's permits within the borough. A lot of those are basically glorified septic systems. They service the ShopRite Plaza there. They service the streets of Chester. They service Chester Springs. But those are, individual systems. The primary system, which the treatment plant is located on Oakdale Road now, services most of Main Street and some of the surrounding houses in that area, right? More or less? No. Please.
The existing sewer service services Shadow Ridge, which was a denser community that was put in, one side of Main Street. It does not service the small properties that are off Main Street, Grove, Bud, Cherry, the ones that have, as Margaret mentioned, the ones that have sewers, or in some cases still cesspools and wells on maybe quarter of an acre or less, a lot, much less of a lot. It does not serve anything on the other side of 206. When the sewer was put in, all the infrastructure was put in on this side of 206 to serve the borough, to take care of the health and safety issue. However, the plant is not large enough to do that. We have entered into a contract with with Natural Systems, who is our sewer consultant, and they are currently working on a feasibility study to expand our system on this side, because we already have the infrastructure there to do
it. Is Larison's property within the sewer service area?
The Larison's property is not on our infrastructure. It's not within the sewer service area.
Is there anything that would prohibit by the approval possible private public partnership? Not within our documents. I mean, I realize that DP might have a problem with the sewer service boundaries as time goes by, but we're not putting a nail, we're not nailing the coffin shut, right?
We can't.
No.
Okay.
That wouldn't be up to us, correct? And you did say in your presentation that they are looking at new technologies.
Correct.
Right. So my only concern is what was said here. Nobody in the public sector to come in and tell a government, it's got to go out to bid. So the fact that somebody's volunteering, you know, you're volunteering, but there's going to be a cost to running it, there's going to be a cost to putting in infrastructure, so they're going to do it for free. Who pays for it? Because they're not doing this out of the kindness of their hearts. It's a money-making operation, I'm sure. But no matter what, governments like the town are constrained by bid laws. They're going to have to follow that. So even if they want a public-private partnership, that goes out to bid when specs are written, and you have consultants that are going to be working with you on your wastewater, sewer treatments, and all the other stuff, right? So when those specs are written, if they want to go out to bid, that's up to them. But it's not, we're not doing anything that's preventing that. Correct?
Correct.
Correct.
That was your question?
Yeah, it was a question. Wait. Is that right?
How's that? My question is simple. Does our staff feel that the wastewater issue can be adequately managed using available technology?
Yes.
Yes. Not being an expert in the field, but yes.
Because it's a big issue. It's not the biggest issue. That is, it's a very big issue.
Yeah, I mean, and as I said, we have had preliminary conversations with the DEP, and I think if they had an issue, if they saw an insurmountable object, they would have put it on the table by now, and they haven't.
Yeah, one last question. The assistance with the wastewater issues, is that contingent upon completing the this process? And this process can take years to go from tonight's resolution to the clients. Or is it concurrent with their full compliance process?
It would be concurrent.
Okay. So they could, by getting the help they need, and then not bring in compliance. As any community.
I suppose technically that would be true.
But they only get paid for deliverables that are complete that we paid for.
Understood.
Mm-hmm.
I'll call for comments. If not, then we'll move on to roll call vote.
Councilmember Olmsted?
Yes.
Councilmember Carluccio?
Yes.
Councilmember Daugherty? Councilmember Dressler?
Yes.
Councilmember Francis?
Yes.
Councilmember Holtaway?
Aye.
Councilmember James?
Yes.
Councilmember Richco?
Yes.
Councilmember Sevitan?
Yes.
Councilmember Tifang?
Yes.
Councilmember Vizioli?
Yes.
Councilmember Voden?
Yes.
Councilmember Walt?
No.
Chairman Ryan?
To show that Mayor Daugherty has arrived. Did you, were you on the phone?
Yep, I just shut it off.
Do you want to cast a vote? We just voted on the resolution.
Sure. You want my vote?
Yeah. Yeah.
No.
Okay.
Good.
The resolution is passed. Congratulations, Chester Borough.
Thank you all very much.
Move on. Next item on the agenda is the Budget and Finance Committee.
Present that? Very briefly, as you know, our budget year is different than the state fiscal year, so we have to adopt a temporary budget. It lasts until October when we do our formal budget. Temporary budget is a proportional piece of the year. Nothing's going up, nothing's going down, just like last year and the year before. So. Recommend that it be approved so that we can keep the mill turning, and as I said, there's no change, and any changes will only be addressed in the final budget.
That means no raises for the staff again, right? I just have to put that out there. So no raises for the staff again, so we got to wait about a year and a half?
No, October is
retired. Okay, she
goes later. We'll discuss that at the end of October.
Any questions for the treasurer? Entertain a motion to approve the resolution.
I'll move.
Second?
I'll second, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Motion's been moved and seconded. Any final discussion? Roll call.
Councilmember Olmsted.
Oh, I'm sorry. Public portion. My apologies. I'm a little rusty, man. Please.
Turn the ground over first before you plant.
You might know that.
You don't plant before you plow? Mr. Shope.
My name is David Shope. I have a farm in the preservation area, and this is actually a continuation of my objections to the budget. Your budgets, whether they be a continuation budget or the budget approved annually, do not contain the costs of renting this place, even though it's paid by the Treasury. I pay the Treasury, as all of you do. The rental for this building is paid by the Treasury. So you're going to operate. Your staff is incurring a pension overhang every day they're here. The pension costs are not part of your budget. So your budget does not reflect the true cost of running this place. And they should. So I'm objecting until I get the true costs. Thank you.
Thank you.
I just didn't want to scare.
Thank you for wanting to have it my back. No problem. Any other members from the public wish to comment on the extension of the existing budget?
Does anybody know how much it is?
No. Treasurer.
Oh my God.
No, first two. I'll find out for you.
It's probably around $600,000.
Well, you don't have to tell me. You've got my home address. Send it to
okay.
me.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
We have to stack it, or could you get that one?
I'm sorry. Did I hear that correctly? We don't know how much.
How can you vote on?
We're voting on to extend the budget. I mean, I vote on the budget every year because, you know, it's my protest. My one sample of protest this thing. A lot of protests, but we don't know how much we're approving tonight.
Yeah.
You know,
it's an extension.
It's an extension of the existing budget. I can
we
get
approve
the
extension. Budget. Extension to how long? And how much is the cost of that extension?
It's until October.
What is it?
Extended until October.
Okay, so how much?
It's going to be.
Oh, come on.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I'm not prepared.
Move the table so we have to know how much it is. Sorry, but come on.
Second.
It's a simple question.
Yeah.
Been a Motion and a second to table. There's no discussion on a motion to table. Vote for motions to table.
Wait.
You're going to get the information.
Well, but I got to act on the motion. So we'll table it, and then we can open it right back up again.
You want me to go back?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Meanwhile, we'll just do a quick hand vote on the motion to table. All those in favor of tabling, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Show your hands so we can get a count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. We even need 8 to take action on this, right?
Yeah.
Otherwise, we continue discussion. All those opposed? All right, so we don't have 8, so it's still open.
Well, you can't see my hand, but I'm in favor of tabling it.
Okay, so we're 7 in favor, still 1 short. So we'll just pause for a moment. Effectively tabling, we'll get the number. Our next item is going to be the presentation of the fiscal impact assessment, but I don't want to start that until we conclude this matter, Councilman Walker. I think it's legitimate to seek the number.
Yeah, I do too. I apologize. You know, we should have it in front of us.
Do you need a recess for like 5 minutes while we do that, or is she able to get it?
I think we have it. I just don't have it in front of me.
Yeah, only because I'm a smoker. I think I would take advantage of it.
But, la, 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 la.
I can lie. But that's
okay. So we're doing you a favor then.
You are. I hate you. But that's okay.
Let's give it 60 more seconds and then we'll. You have permission also.
I don't need permission.
Executive Director, did we obtain that information? Just call back to order.
We have, if you let me do like a little math thingy, because we have the total expenditures for this budget from last year, which was $2,460,542.92, and the number that we were asking for is that number divided by 12 multiplied by 4.
One third.
Yes.
So $800,000.
And the fiscal year for the state runs from, just so everybody's clear?
July 1st to June 31st, which is why we're doing it at the July meeting.
Right. So we're all clear? So we have, we're extending the budget for one third of the year. The fiscal year began on July 1st, so we're actually already operating within the new budget that
and
we haven't.
The number you're voting on is $820,180.97.
To bring us to our fiscal year.
To bring us to October.
Yes. Right.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay.
We did. Any other? Are we open to the public since we presented this number to make sure there's nobody else that wishes to speak on this extension? Mr. Schultz, I'll give you the floor.
Thanks for doing that.
This number still does not include the rent for this place, pension overhang for your staff, or any other services provided by the state, whether it be for the Treasury to keep this place running. It's all part of the cost, so your budget is flawed. So I would hope that you would correct your budget to be to represent the true cost rather than this God knows what portion of it. But it is not the total cost of running this place. So I object. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comments on the budget extension? Not public portion is closed. Final comments from council members. Now we will proceed to a roll call vote.
Councilmember Alston?
Yes.
Councilmember Carluccio?
Yes.
Councilmember Daugherty?
Yes.
Councilmember Dressel?
I don't know how every member here isn't embarrassed by what just happened. I'm voting as a protest no.
Councilmember Francis?
Yes.
Councilmember Holton?
Aye.
Councilmember James?
Yes.
Councilmember Richka?
Yes.
Councilmember Sevitin?
Yes.
Councilmember Tiefang? Councilmember Tiefang? Councilmember Vizioli?
Yes.
Councilmember Voden?
Yes.
Councilmember Walton?
No.
Mr. Chair, if I can say, I'm embarrassed too. It was a real oversight on my part. I'm very sorry.
Mine as well.
As a comment, when municipalities and counties regularly introduce temporary budgets at the beginning of the year, there's a format to those resolutions that basically take the budget in short form and show it on the resolution with the reduced numbers for the better time. I think a resolution on that format would be much more advantageous to us than saying we're going to extend another 3 months. So just, any town, any county with their temporary budget, we've all seen it.
That's a good suggestion because I don't want to ever have this happen again.
I would imagine it will not happen again while we're here. Okay, we'll move on to the next item on the agenda, which is a regional master plan update. With us today, we have a familiar face, Steve Gunnels from California, took the red eye to be with us.
Not by choice.
But it's only going on 2 o'clock in your brain, so I'm sure you've got plenty of energy and spunk ready to go. And he's going to give us a continued part of the financial or the fiscal impact assessment that he's been working on the contract with us. This will be phase 3. There was a preliminary viewing of this with the committee, and today we presented with the entire council and to the public. Any other comments before Steve continues? Corey, Parker?
I have none, thank you.
Okay. Steve, floor is yours.
All right. So what we want to cover today is a brief review of what we mean when we say that there's a statistically significant difference or there is no statistically significant difference, which is kind of critical to a lot of what we've talked about in the first two phases. Just a brief recap of what we covered in those first two phases. And then get into the content for the third and phase of the fiscal impact assessment, which covers municipal revenues. And primarily what we've looked at are the equalized property values, the assessed property values, and the municipal property tax revenues. So just to remind everybody, within the overall fiscal impact assessment, there were... three phases. We've already presented the first two. This is the third and final phase. We'll compile all these together into one report and add... We'll combine all three of these together, and there are a few little odds and end pieces under the contract that we will add into that final report and be back sometime in the near future with the final kit and caboodle on that. Also to remind everybody, part of what we're doing is looking at the Highlands region and asking how did certain indicators, measurements of the economy, property tax revenues, and all of these things, how are they similar or different between the municipalities that make up the Highlands region and these comparison regions? And throughout the project, we've had two comparison regions in New Jersey. One are the Highlands County municipalities that aren't in the Highlands region, and the other being 11 counties of northern New Jersey, where we've added in these four counties here. And we also had the adjacent regions in four counties of Pennsylvania and four counties in New York. For the municipal revenues, it's not comparable looking from state to state, so it just focuses on what's happened in New Jersey. And then one of the changes I've made this time, because it was discussed in the context of the last presentation, was previously when we talked about northern New Jersey, the 11 counties, it included the Highlands region municipalities. And there was a question about, should we be doing that or separating them? So for this phase, I pulled them out. So when we talk about northern New Jersey, it's excluding the 88 municipalities within the Highlands region. So, statistical significance. A lot of times, what we're doing when we're looking at a set of data is we're asking ourselves, we have two things we're comparing, and we want to know, are they the same thing or are they different? So here's just an example. If you take a red team and a blue team, and this is they had 40, 50% of something happening in month one, and then this is what they had in month two. And so and when we look at it, we have 88 people on the team for the Highlands region. Here we have, I think, 10 on each of these groups. And the question becomes, what are they doing? When you start looking at all of these different actors, what is it they're doing? And is it different than the others? And so one of the things people do is say, well, let's just take the average. Because when you look at that, it's kind of hard to tell, are these the red team and the blue team the same or are they different here? So one of the things people do is let's take the average and see what's happening with the average. Now, one of the problems you have when you take an average is kind of the jumping around. So if you look at the red team here, most of them are going down, but you do have these few and one that goes up a lot. So there's different things happening within that whole team. And when you just take the average, you start to lose some of that detail of what's happening. And so if you've heard me in the previous presentation say, well, there's a lot of variability in the data, that's what we mean. That it's not everybody going in the same direction and going at about the same rate. Yet some that are going up, some that are going down, some that are moving a little, some that are moving a lot. And that really starts to complicate the analysis when we look at it. So part of what we're doing, when we take an average and we just draw one line, we're kind of suggesting that all of these people are doing the same thing. And that's what we get at with statistical significance. How sure are we that this average really is the same thing for everybody that's on that team? So another way to look at it is, take the teams out. You all can't actually see that, can you?
They can. There's a screen.
Oh, yeah,
that's right in front of us.
Okay. So what we're saying here is on the red team, we had about four members that had one unit, eight that had two units. And so the red team is doing this, the blue team's doing that. And when you look at it this way, you can kind of get the feeling that there is something different between the red team and the blue team. And here it is. Statistically, we would say the difference between these two is significant. But here's another example of how the data may look. And when you look at this, now it's not so clear. Are these two different? Are they doing the same thing? And in this case, we have an average value on the red team. Of three. Oh, sorry. Not keeping up with my notes. an average value of 5.5 for the red team and an average value of 6.5 for the blue team. The averages are different, but with this data set, it's not statistically significant. We're not that certain that the two averages represent the two teams doing something completely different. So this is all coming to this final point here. So this goes back to that first slide I showed you, this one. And instead of showing all the lines, we're showing the average value for the blue team, the average value for the red team. And then this colored area is what we call the 95% confidence interval. And what that means is, you know, we can calculate that line and say that's the average. But within that colored area, we're 95% certain that what that red team is doing is somewhere in that red box. And we're 95% certain that what the blue team is doing is somewhere in this box. So where there's a gap between the two confidence intervals, we say that's statistically significant. We can't be exactly sure where that average is, but with the variability and how far apart it is, we're pretty certain that it is actually different. When you get to this data figure and this data figure, the two averages are different, but the confidence intervals overlap. So we cannot statistically be certain that what's really happening with those two sets of data is different. Now, that doesn't mean it's not different, but just looking at the data, we can't be fairly certain that it is different. And so what I've tried to do is we go through this analysis, instead of showing two or three lines with the gap between them, and tell you, trust me, it's different or it's not different. We're trying to show these confidence intervals. So I hope as we go through, this will make a little bit more sense to you. Okay, so a quick recap of what we found in the first phase. We did see some difference in job growth between the Highlands region and the two comparison regions in New Jersey.
Can I go back because I was reading that?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thanks.
Yeah, I put that up there, and then I get to it, and I think, well, I don't need to read it to them. But I know what it says.
So I
read it pretty fast. So just to recall, the Highlands region had a higher employment growth rate from 04 to 08. And less job loss from 2008 to 2013 compared to the Highlands County municipalities, not in the Highlands region, and northern New Jersey. When we looked at within the Highlands region and compared the preservation area to the planning area, the preservation area had negative job growth from 04 to 08 and the highest job loss rate from 2008 to 2013. And as we found, the majority of that was really within the construction industry. As we also noted at that time, construction jobs are measured where the construction business is located, not where the construction projects are located. And that kind of complicated joining.
That's significant.
Yeah.
You just said. Where it's located, not where the jobs are.
Right. So that doesn't tell us about construction in the planning area and preservation.
So if somebody
area.
Has a business in Edison, can they come up here and they do work? It's evaluated as to where the business is located. Doesn't seem to make too much sense.
No. And I have to say, it's shocking that where we have a preservation area, there's not a lot of construction jobs.
So the other thing that you know, kind of a key outcome that we saw in the first phase was if we take the annual rate of change in employment within the Highlands region, which is the purple line, and what was happening in the 19 counties, everything except for the Highlands region, and this held true for each of the regions. This red line here just represents everybody added together. What was happening with employment in the Highlands region in general was the same thing that was happening elsewhere. We had a few years of increasing growth rate, some declining growth rate, huge loss of jobs, a little bounce back, but not a very sustained bounce back through 2011. So the kind of overall finding we had from phase one was that based on the data did not have, we couldn't say that there was a statistically significant difference of what was going on to draw the conclusion that the Act or the Regional Master Plan had negatively or positively influenced the economy as measured by jobs. And I forgot the one key point I wanted to make in that first part. A lot of what we're talking about is it statistically significant? You can have a statistically significant difference, which means we know these two things are different, but it doesn't amount to a hill of beans. So significant doesn't mean significant in the way we would talk about it. It just means that we're confident that these two things are different. And we're not confident that they were different when it comes to employment over this whole time period. In the second phase, we looked at the residential building permits, and the kind of one of the key things that came out of it is what has happened. You know, this is all of northern New Jersey, and you can see how the single-family housing permits peaked in 1998 and generally declined and didn't really have a bounce back up until the end of the recession, whereas the multifamily housing was growing slowly and then really took off, had the drop-off with the recession, but then really shot right back up. And I think 2014 it was 75% of all the residential units completed in northern New Jersey.
Do you have that rent for the preservation area?
No, because what we don't have is data about each building permit where it was. The state has a digital database, but it's not complete. It doesn't represent everybody, and for the ones it doesn't go very far back yet. So there's no real way to know that. We do have it by municipality.
It represents northern New Jersey, including the Highlands region?
This is excluding the Highlands region.
Okay.
Yeah. And so really that was kind of the key outcome of this, is that what's happened within the Highlands region municipalities and is that they've had this same decline in single family housing that goes back to 1998, which was the peak. And what's different about the Highlands region is there wasn't a escalation, a takeoff in the multifamily that you saw in the rest of northern New Jersey. And when we break it down by the rest of northern New Jersey, it's really those four other counties that aren't in the Highlands region and a little bit on the eastern side of the Highlands region, so Bergen, Passaic, primarily. What happened west of the Highlands region also did not have that bounce and anything significant at the multifamily housing. We also looked at a range of demographic factors in the second phase and looked at these, and where we did see a statistically significant difference was on three measures, really. One, the Highlands region was getting older a little bit faster than the other regions. There are fewer children, and the households are getting smaller. And this is where you get into this, it's statistically significant. How significant is that? So some of these, it's a small difference, but it's a trend. That's one of the things we've talked about, you know, keeping in mind as you go forward. Was this a temporary thing, or is this a sustained trend that's going to change the Highlands region?
Well, the young people want to live in Hoboken.
And Jersey City, and Little River, and their jobs are in New York. Nothing following the jobs.
Yeah, Mars.
Well, 100 is still nice.
It's a new term. I'm very happy to have you folks stay away.
We're all going there next week.
We also looked at you know, a variety of measures in terms of sales values for residential, commercial, industrial, vacant land. Once again, there wasn't a statistically significant difference in these measures between the municipalities in the Highlands region and the other municipalities. Where it was close, you might say, was in the sales value per acre for vacant land. And that was one where we suggested, you know, that's something to continue monitoring going forward. You know, once again, is that something that didn't bounce back the same way in the Highlands region but does come along a couple of years later? Or is that something that really is on two different tracks and just continues to diverge and, you know, in a few years becomes statistically significant? So, that brings us to our municipal revenues. And when we go through everything that's there, there's really three measures that are kind of germane to what we're getting at, which, you know, overall is looking at the degree that we can find that there's a difference between the Highlands region municipalities and these other municipalities that corresponds with the Act and the Regional Master Plan. And how does that impact the revenues, the fiscal resources that municipalities have? Is there a difference between those in the Highlands region and those that aren't? So what we looked at was equalized property value, the real property assessed value, and property tax revenues. Now, equalization is a process that it goes through every year. And for each municipality, each jurisdiction, the assessors look at the properties that changed hand. And what was the difference in the sales price and the assessed value before it sold? And then they go through and say, okay, well, if the average difference on the residential was 10%, we're going to say all of the residential assessed values should be 10% higher. Because if they had all changed hands that year, that's what they would have sold for. And it gets at estimating what's the market value of all the taxable real estate in that jurisdiction. Now, the important thing to keep in mind is equalized value doesn't really directly affect any one property. The equalized value of municipalities, the county, regional, you know, school districts that cover more than a jurisdiction, they allocate the revenue they need to generate from property taxes based on the equalized value in each of the municipalities within their jurisdiction. They say, you know, municipality A, you're responsible for 10% of our budget next year. B, you're responsible for 30% because you have 10% of the total equalized value and you have 30%. What matters to property owners is their real property assessed value. because your tax, your property tax, is based on your real property assessed value. So it's easy for the municipality in that they have $1 amount that's going to be generated by property tax revenue, and they have one set of properties. The county then says, municipality A, you got to generate 10% of our revenue next year. It then gets divided among the property owners in that municipality based on their assessed property value. So that for the property owner, the equalized value doesn't enter into the check they're writing, other than to the extent it shifts the burden from one municipality to another. And so for a municipal jurisdiction, this is the property tax revenue. It's all based on the real property assessed value, not the equalized value. What's valuable to us looking at this is the idea of the equalized property value is an estimate of the market value of all the taxable real estate. What's valuable to us with the assessed value is that's what is the tax base. That's what's going to generate most of the revenue for that particular municipality. And then the third thing we look at are the property tax revenues. And then the property tax revenues, the municipality creates its budget, figures out how much state aid, you know, what other sources, and what's left over is what it has to get out of property taxes, and then just divides that amongst all of the taxable real estate based on assessed value. Okay, I think I've beaten that one to death. So we're going to start with the equalized value. And so what we see here, the red line represents the annual change in equalized value. And this is the total added up for all the Highlands Region municipalities. Then the total, the blue line represents the total. It represents the percent change in that total. The blue line is the percent change in the total among all the municipalities in the Highlands counties that aren't in the region. Green is then northern New Jersey, excluding the Highlands region. So you can see, in general, starting from the change from 2000 to 2001 to about 2006, pretty much a high growth rate in all three regions, generally above 10% each year increase in equalized value, which is an estimate of the market value of each of these regions. Starting from 06, the rate of increase declined. It was still growing, but instead of 10%, 5%, a few percent, and then from 2008 to 2009, the equalized value started declining. Negative across all these years, a little less negative from 2012 to 2013, and then finally started actually growing again going into 2014. So it's kind of the pattern across all three regions. So now we get back to the question we've been looking at in all of these. We look at the municipalities within the Highlands region, and we look at the municipalities in the Highlands County counties that aren't in the Highlands region. What was the difference? And so what we had here was from 2000 to 2004, predating the Act, the Highlands region had, on average each year, a higher rate of growth in equalized value than the other municipalities in Highlands County. And there's a gap between those confidence intervals. So we'd say that's statistically significant. It may look like a little difference, but it is statistically significant. That was different. When we look from 2004 to 2008, when we look 2004 to 2008, you may not be able to tell, you know, projected all the way up there, but there is an overlap between the confidence intervals. The Highlands region was lower. Oh, wait a minute. Looking at the wrong one. That's why I wanted to double check my notes. Got ahead of myself. Oh, yeah. Okay, all three of these were statistically significant. So the Highlands region had higher growth rate before the Act, slightly less, but statistically significant difference from 2004 to 2008. And then the decline. It started to come back in 2014 and 2015, but it still wasn't higher than it was in 2008. So overall, it was a decline, and the decline was larger on average in the Highlands region than the other municipalities. When we compare the Highlands region to northern New Jersey, excluding the Highlands region municipalities, in the period prior to the Act, the Highlands region was slightly less on average than northern New Jersey, but that difference is not statistically significant. From 2004 to 2008, less, and a significant difference. Once again, from 2008 to 2015, a larger decrease in equalized property values in the Highlands region, and it was significant. So the total real property assessed value, once again, this is if we add up all the municipalities in each of the regions, some slight differences, whereas the Highlands County municipalities that aren't in the Highlands region had a much higher growth rate prior to the recession than the other two regions. But there's no clear trend across this time period to say that they were all doing something similar. They're all a little bit different in terms of what was going on overall. Now, one of the things with assessment, so assessed value changes, a property's assessed value changes when there's new construction or substantial construction on a property. If there's no construction, the assessed value doesn't change, unless there's a municipality-wide reevaluation or reassessment of property values. And so generally, where we're seeing increases, this reflects where there was a lot of new construction going on. And in this one, the green line for northern New Jersey, that excludes all of the Highlands counties because it would be so far up it smashes everything flat. You can't really see anything. So what this is telling us was, really, this is where there was a big part of the construction that was going on. And this was primarily Morris, Bergen, and Passaic, where a lot of that construction was. And, you know, once again, you know, outside of the Highlands region, we did have this factor going on with the increase in multifamily housing that was happening. Now, because assessed value goes up with construction, one of the things that's important to do is look at it in terms of both inflation and the increase in demand for services. So if a municipality gets a 10% increase in assessed value, theoretically a 10% increase in property tax revenues, but they have a 10% increase in their cost to provide services because their population grew by 10%. It really is a wash. It doesn't really tell us anything. So what we look at here is the difference if we take the real property assessed value adjusted for inflation and the number of households. And when we do that, and we don't have data on the number of households from 2000 to 2010, so we're really comparing this figure to each year starting in 2010. So all three of these regions were better off. They actually had a higher real assessed value in 2010 than they did in 2000. They've all decreased since then, but they're all still better off than they were in 2000 across the three regions. So this is for the three regions, the annual change, the annual rate of change that was going on. And once again, you kind of see some similar things, but not really any clear trend. And one thing to keep in mind, you see this two-year growth in the Highlands region, which looks pretty significant when we're looking on a percentage basis. You know, that represents that change there in assessed value. So don't get too fooled by the annual rate of change when, you know, the effect on the municipality was not so big. All of this to say, you know, there's no clear trend here, so it's not clear that we would expect to see a difference when it comes to, you know, looking at these periods. But what we do see when we compare the municipalities in the Highlands region to the other municipalities in the Highlands County, and this is the annual rate of change, the average for the municipalities in each region, we see that the Highlands, the average in the Highlands region was higher than the other Highlands County municipalities, and the difference was statistically significant. And you see how big this confidence interval, that means there's a lot of variability in the underlying data, and you kind of see that here where everything's bouncing around a lot. From 04 to 08, the Highlands region was slightly lower, but not statistically significant, and the same thing from 2008 to 2015. When we compare it to Northern New Jersey on the assessed value, and remember, this is what generates the property tax revenues for the municipalities. From 2000 to 2004, once again, the Highlands region was higher, and the difference is statistically significant. Lower, not statistically significant. Here, lower, but this time it is a statistically significant difference between the Highlands region and Northern New Jersey. And then that brings us to the last measure, which is the property tax revenue. Once again, the tax rates applied to the assessed property value. And the rates adjusted each year based on the budget that the municipality needs to generate, to a certain degree limited to 2%, although there are exceptions to that. And once again, we're looking at an inflation-adjusted rate and looking at it per household to kind of see how it varies with the demand for services. So because of the, you know, using households, we're limited to the time periods. But as you can see, from 2000 to 2010, the Highlands region was higher than the other municipalities in the Highlands counties, but not statistically significant. I guess that's slightly higher, but once again, not statistically significant. And same thing when we look at the differences with northern New Jersey. There were some differences, but none statistically significant. The last thing we look at is a 10-year cash flow. I think that was a little more important 10 years ago when, or not 10 years ago, when you did this and everything was getting started, really thinking about where you were going to be putting your money, and I think you kind of see where things are going now. So we try to keep this simple in the report. The red line represents nominal dollars of what the state has allocated to the Highlands Protection Fund each year. You know, it was slightly over $10 million. There was a drop-off here, in part or all, because the Pinelands portion of this expired or was taken away. And then it's been the same since then. The only thing I added to that is if you take an inflation adjustment for that, even though these lines are relatively consistent, over time, the loss of purchasing power means it's actually, you know, less. And as you go forward 10 years, you would see the same thing. If the red line continues straight, the blue line, you know, the purchasing power of that would decrease. And then another thing we have in there is just looking at the watershed moratorium offset aid, which is a chunk of that Highlands Protection Fund, and the municipalities where that's going, kind of these circles showing you the magnitude of the municipalities. Some have very small dot, some have big dots, and some have no dots at all. And then just a note that there are 39 municipalities not in the Highlands region that get a portion, 17% of those funds. And those dollar amounts have stayed the same every year, and it doesn't change. So what are the takeaways from this? What's getting the equalized value, which is important because it's getting at that idea of market value, what everything is worth. From 2000 to 2004, no statistically significant difference within the two comparison regions. We did start to see a difference from 2004 to 2008 with northern New Jersey, and from 2008 to 2015, statistically significant difference with both of the comparison regions. So that the estimated market value is lower, and this corresponds with these time periods of the Act and the RMA. Once again, that affects. We're talking about that as an estimate of market values. It doesn't really affect the revenues going to the municipalities. When we look at the tax base, from 2000 to 2004, statistically significant difference with the Highlands region having a higher rate of growth in assessed values prior to the Act. 2004 to 2008, after adoption of the Act, no statistically significant difference. And from 2008 to 2015, it was lower, but this is only statistically significant when compared with all of northern New Jersey, not when compared with the Highlands County municipalities, not the Highlands region. And property tax revenues, no difference. Statistically. And that's not really counterintuitive, because the revenues are what the revenues are. The tax rates may change. You know, each municipality determines how much it's going to spend and how much it needs to raise in those property tax revenues. So, you know, in retrospect, we wouldn't really necessarily expect to see the Act or the RMP affecting that decision. So kind of the recommendation is, you know, continuing to monitor that difference in equalized property value and see how that continues. Is it something where it's a lag in the bounce back after the recession, or is it something that continues to diverge going forward? And then a secondary indicator, it's nothing that in our analysis we say is an issue, but it does make sense to continue to monitor the real property assessed values and the property tax revenues going forward. Because if differences were to develop, that could have a significant impact. Not nearly as quick as I thought I'd
be. That's a good report, but it doesn't tell me anything about the regional master plan affecting the preservation versus the planning. Your generalization for the region is on the money, on the mark. But when you start looking at preservation, for example, our town is 70% planning, 30% preservation. If to follow your theory on growth, it's not true. There is no growth in the preservation to speak of. Or if there is, it's very little. Versus the planning area, the growth is astronomical. We just put up $5 million with a new building in the planning area, zero. Well, hopefully, maybe we'll do $500,000 in preservation. So, generalization is good, and economically, you're correct for our region. But as far as preservation goes, the regional master plan does not affect the region. It affects the preservation area. And really, the focus of the Act really is to get a control on development. So if we don't have a lot of growth, then the Act is working. And so that's not reflected in what you said. That's why I said you have that chart preservation, because it would be here and here.
Right. So
that would be the effect of the regional method.
Yeah. So the problem is there's the annual assessment data, but time that, this is very technical, you know, we have the computer mapping, the GIS, where it's outlined, here's the preservation, here's the planning area. But that isn't done for every year of assessed data. So every year, and I think that's 2013, is that? That's the year they're correlating. Every year you get away from that, you start to lose more and more records that where the partial numbers change.
In reality, the planning area is subsidized to preservation as far as growth and opportunity, also assessed value. You know, the constraints in the preservation area are much greater. And whatever it is. But economically, it's a disaster to preservation. If you're looking at growth, if you're looking at multifamily housing, if you're looking at industrial development, ain't happening. So that we have to reflect that. And just saying the growth in the region is X in this region and Y in this region, yeah, that's all true. But the regional master plan affects a very specific area that requires a very specific look at what's happening economically and growth-wise. We should show that.
Bunch of comments. As we know, what we're doing is we're supposed to be searching for indicators. This part three, I do have a couple of issues, and one of the indicators that I don't know how to get our arms around is demographics. As your that reduction in number of children, the rise in the average age, the size of families, and everything else is a demographic change, and that is obviously freeing up real estate, which then drives down the price of real estate and drives down the values. So, but also, if the area is contracting population-wise, there's no need for new construction, there's no need for new stores, blah, 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 blah. It's a whole thing. So, and then back a little bit to Mike's comment, you know, the RMP and the Act, the preservation area isn't controlled by us, it's controlled by the Act. So, the impact of the RMP is there, but the constraints are in the Act, and how do we take those indicators? Another issue is in the areas that we're studying, in the Highlands area, zoning has been historically large lot, mostly to accommodate wells and septic systems, and also the nature of the farming and everything else. So our zoning sizes are much higher. Plus, multifamily housing, which has been the demographic trend, as we saw from 2004, 2002, whatever, in most of those places, it's not controlled by zoning. So, yes, there's no growth, but it's being constrained by the demographics, and it's being constrained by local zoning. And as we all know, everything is trending toward urban. That's why centers are so important, in order to create a semi-urban environment in the Highlands area to allow some development, you know, growth. However, there hasn't been a stampede that I expected for centers. On equalized value, I think that's probably the best indicator that's come up on this third part. That increased value, though, is two components, actually three. It's the underlying value, then it's inflation growth, and then new construction. And I think that the equalized valuation is probably the best, as you also indicate. However, when we get into assessed values, we're dealing with a very badly moving target because of the nature of revaluation in New Jersey. If you take a town, there's 88 towns, if you take, you're supposed to revaluate at the maximum for 10 years. Well, most of them don't even do it in 10, and Jersey City is what?
I don't know, 30 years.
So if you do have a revaluation, you have an extremely significant impact on that number, and there's zero change in value. So I think, you know, we really need to tend, and I think that might be to the point where I would hardly consider a secondary indicator because of that one issue that impacts it, and that's probably characteristic in New Jersey is the way that actually happens. The real assessed values, again, it goes up by construction and revaluation again, but on the municipal revenues, obviously, you take the town says, oh, we're going to spend this much money. Some of it's because of demand for services, some of it's because they might want to do stuff, and you're dividing it by the assessed valuation, and you're coming up with a number. I think that the only thing that this shows is the impact of the 2% cap. And that narrowing, you just see the narrowing down of all these rates going all over the place, and then focusing right down to 2%, bingo. I don't think that's an indicator for us. I don't think that has any Highlands value because it is controlled by state law, and I don't think that that's really something that we should see. The other thing, and I've expressed this time and time again, and that is the loss of value that we faced. When you went through your whole real estate analysis, I clearly understand how somebody living in a single-family house on half an acre, the R&B, and the Act had no impact on it. Zero. That house is exit before, exit after. Where the impact has occurred is in large lots, very large lots. In your vacant land analysis, there's enough vacant land out there that the average was 5 acres. But we're dealing with something where you probably went from a 5-acre zone zoning, now we jumped to 25 or 88. So you take somebody with 150 acres that under previous zoning might have had a subdivision potential, all things, you know, excess, wetlands, and everything else taken into consideration, might have an ultimate yield of 10 lots. Now he's got one. And, you know, I think that value indicator is really something that would tell us something as that value changed, as the values of those large lots, those previously subdividable, no longer subdividable pieces of property, what has happened there, what value has been taken out, because that is the RMP. The RMP has really, can have some impact on that, and that I think would be a much better indicator. I think it's a number we should know. We have signs hanging around that say $6 billion. I've sat down with staff and looked at it, and I guess maybe $2.5 billion. But I think that's something that really, which was very specifically addressed in this report, because there's nothing that there's more fighting about, there's nothing there's more arguing about, there's nothing that needs just common sense than that. Any answers you have, I'm happy to hear.
Well, on that last one, I'd say we talked at length looking at that vacant land issue. And there's a lot of things that go on with that. So, yes, if somebody had the ability to subdivide 10 acres before the act and now they can't, there's a theoretical loss, subdivided into 10 lots. But if nobody's building that, they couldn't have sold those 10 lots anyway.
Well, that's
and so there's a lot that goes on, and the problem is there's a way you can look at it from a real estate perspective and say here's what the house lot value is for a large lot. And yeah, here's so if you had 10 of those, here's what this is worth, and you've lost this value. And so it's I don't want to say, the first word pops in my head is premature, and that's not the right word, but there aren't enough sales of those in the last few years to say, here's what the value of that house lot is, to calculate that. And because that would be my approach to doing this, but we just don't have enough data to make that call on right now. So I think that's, I know it's frustrating, I think that's something that has to be put off for a few more years and see what happens to that market. And is it a market change that people just aren't building those size houses? Because that's kind of where I hear from developers. It's that idea of the townhouse and hopefully the small lot subdivisions, but those are going to be water and sewer type things. And nobody really knows when that large lot well set type market will come back. And I think that's a challenge to realistically saying, here's the value that's been lost.
I think that would be an indicator saying, okay, back in 2004, this was 10 lots. Today, we have to take into account the demographics.
Yeah.
Because I agree with you, that large lot market is dead. I know in Venice, where I am, it's right now it's dying. And Sussex and Warren and Hunterdon, I know it's even worse. So, but is that, it seems to me that somehow should be an indicator of how that market is moving and how that is what's happening and how those people have lost and would they have lost anyway? That's where those values have gone down. I suspect they would have found if those lots, if we really did an analysis, they probably would not have the value we would expect.
And that's what I'm getting. You won't know until that market comes back. And if it comes back where you still have your 10 lots and doesn't come back where you don't, then or at least when it does come back in those other areas, you get an idea of what that value is.
I find the hope.
Yeah.
Not having our arms around that very frustrating.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, and the reality is that large tract sales, say west of here, Warren, Sussex, Pennsylvania, Northampton, Lehigh, you lose proximity to the city, you lose proximity to public transportation, so it's a whole different market anyway. So you can't even say, well, we can compare how are large lot transactions occurring in these western counties that are not in the Highlands compared to municipalities in the Highlands. There's no large lots east of here, so you can't measure east closer to the city. Yeah. These are landlocked. And the ones west don't apply because they're too far away. So it's sort of a lost bastion that should be an indicator, but we have no way of measuring it, other than they're not occurring, which in itself may be a measurement, but there's nothing to measure it against.
Right. So it is a real hole.
Yeah, it is.
It's a real hole. And the arguments all come from that. All the arguments come from that.
Oh, it's right.
Yes, it's all done. I understand that reason for the argument. But we can't get our arms around.
And I didn't take those. I was hoping to get some of those. So I forgot your other key points, but you had some I did want to comment on.
Please. I still want data properly affected by the rate of momentum.
Period.
Is that what we're... That,
Generalize all you want, but there's a set of rules that the Regional Medicine Plan and the Act clearly direct and control.
Well, the Act more than the Regional Plans.
Yeah, well, the Act, they run together, and they better be in conflict.
Well, they may run together, but we can't change the Act.
Therein lies my point about generalizing of growth rates and values and stuff like that. That's the law.
Other council member comments, questions?
Yeah, I just had a question. So it seems pretty clear that overall it's really these large social and economic trends that are influencing these values, and it's happening pretty much the same across all of Northern New Jersey. Not a whole lot of difference. It seems like you can see the recession in there, and you can see this new trend towards, you know, an urban renaissance and multifamily homes, people wanting to move out of these large lots that they have to take care of and that sort of thing. And so it seems like that's really what's controlling this here and not anything to do with the RMP. But I'm wondering how long, like you're saying, you can talk about, gee, I had 10 lots, but if you didn't have a buyer, you didn't really have 10 lots. How long is it, like 10 years more that we would look at that would give us some idea of whether or not that sort of trend of developing large lots with big houses would come back, or whether that's something that was an era that's now gone and is not going to come back? Like, you know, we've only had a little bit of time.
$64 million question in the real estate industry is where's that housing? I mean, everybody, and it's not just here. I mean, we see it in Southern California. We see it in other states I'm working in. You know, what's been strong in the last few years is that townhouse, the small lot subdivision, the things that you have to have well and sewer for. In my perspective, I think a lot of developers think that the millennials won't be quite as urban as everybody thinks they're going to be, you know, 5 or 10 years from now when they have kids. But honestly, nobody really knows where that's going. And what effect, you know, will that movement be, and how long does it take? Nobody really knows. So I can't say it's, you know, come back in 10 years. I think intuitively, you all who know your communities will know when you start seeing people bringing in 10, you know, large lot subdivisions, say, wow, that's the first one. Now that's the second one. Hey, something's going on. Let's go. Now maybe we can get a dollar amount and apply it to what that, I mean, yeah, I guess GIS, you could calculate what that lot loss was, the value of it, and so you have a value use.
Really clear, like in Hunterdon County where I live, that pressure is not there to build on those big properties with, you know, the 10-acre lot on the 100-acre property. It's just not there. And it's interesting because, you know, everyone, we all have sort of preconceived ideas about what the RMP did or didn't do, but I think these numbers, it's very interesting to see that we're really just in concert with what's going on across not only this area in northern New Jersey, but it seems like it's almost a national term.
Well, and I think you also have, you know, I don't want to completely agree with your statement that it's the social trends driving. I mean, I think that's a lot of it, but There's a gray in there area in there that we don't know, because we do know that the Highlands region didn't have much multifamily zoning before the Act. It wasn't zoned for it. It doesn't have extensive water and sewer networks that would be there to support that multifamily housing. So we don't know that, you know, had we had those things in the Highlands region, that some of these communities wouldn't have seen some of that growth. It seems intuitive that it's not urban, you know, it's not urban and it wouldn't have. But we don't really know, because once again, we don't have that thing to compare it to.
Even if the community wanted that type of growth, now they can't build the capacity or obtain the capacity to create that growth. So that's accurate. Steve, have you and your associates looked at the results of the dual appraisal process for farmland preservation, lot specific? Right, so all the preserved properties in this region have the capability of seeking dual appraisals. They can, when they seek farmland preservation, they can either have appraisals done pre-2004 and current, then they choose the one they want. Well, of course, everybody's gone pre-Highlands, right? It's been higher, but you know, to what extent have we obtained that data, and how relevant is that data as an indicator? Because there, at least, we have lots of specific examples that would demonstrate a difference in value, right? Done by appraisers, using comparable properties, getting pretty specific.
No, we did not do that particular analysis. We did look at a variety of factors for, you know, how much within, you know, for, you know, this municipality, how much ag land had been preserved, how much open space there was, and these didn't make any difference when you used them or didn't use them relative to the three things that we did look at.
Chairman, if I may. We actually did look at that internally, and what we found is there's actually not enough data points available. I want to say there was, off the top of my head, 144 total data points, and of those, they're so scattered throughout. I can't, as you had pointed out before, I can't compare a property in Harmony Township with a property in Chester Township. And so that dispersion of them just doesn't allow us to do it.
House members? Rob, you're silent.
Is that usual? So you're saying?
Yes.
I think it corroborates what we've all felt, that the Highlands Act really has had a significant impact.
Mr. Chairman, at the last meeting when we discussed this, Chairman Riley said we shouldn't be giving comments because we're debating this eventually. And if we want to debate
first,
it today, it's going to go on.
Mr. Richko,
yeah.
I believe the Chairman asked me to comment.
It's your decision, but we're going to have a debate on it right here and there.
I don't think we're going to have a debate tonight. Just a question, make a comment.
Questions were permitted.
I'll extend some prerogative to him, and limit each of us to 3 minutes.
But it's also clear that the greater trends that the nation is seeing are driving most of what we're seeing here. And let's face it, the recession, you can see that in the numbers. You certainly have felt in Hunterdon County the changing culture of millennials. But there is, you know, where most of the state hasn't been worse, as bad, Hamilton has been worse.
Would you like to make a comment?
You know, it's just that we talk about the preservation area, and we want to know how it's impacting the preservation area. And if the whole Highlands region provides 70% of the state's water supply, think about how much of that comes from the preservation area. And it wouldn't bother me or concern me that the growth as far as development is very low, because that's where our state's water comes from, and it must be preserved for the other 84% of the state that uses this water for their homes, for their businesses, for their factories. This is where it comes from, and you need to preserve it.
And you're right, but show it in charts.
How do you show that on a chart?
I think that's what we're seeking here is data points that can demonstrate what the cost of preserving that resource is to the individual landowners and to the state and to municipalities, right? I think that's what we're after, is data points, so that we're not here today to debate the virtue of whether we preserve it or not. It's done, right? That's been done by the legislature. So now our job is to identify what impact does this have, and how do we identify those impacts, and how do we not only identify them today, but how do we continue to identify them?
And we identify them, but what do we do with that identification?
Well, that I think becomes the next step. That will become part of the next regional plan update. If we discover that there's been zero impact on property values, then perhaps there's not a lot to do in terms of equity compensation. We discovered that there's been a significant impact in property values, then perhaps we need to be more diligent in working towards methods of providing appropriate compensation, right? If we find that municipalities are suffering because they're not able to raise the revenues that they once had because assessed values are decreasing because people are moving out, and it's because there's no job opportunities, because there's no more construction, then that's having an impact, and we may have to address that in another way.
But how do we, what do we,
well, that's a discussion for, that's a discussion for this, right?
That's okay.
Right now we're developing the measurement points, right, the indicators, so that we can try to have an objective way of evaluating so that we don't end up debating whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, right? We want to at least know exactly what it is, regardless of your opinion, whether this is a good law or a bad law.
I don't think anybody on this council disagrees that there was a loss in value to properties. I don't think anybody disagrees that we should make an effort, whether that's getting the legislature to do something about it. You know, we know that more money should be going to municipalities that are protecting the water. So the question is, how do you get them more money? How do you compensate people that feel that they were devalued? And we've talked about this before, and Bob, you've tried to do something with this, right? So it's not that we're not caring about it. I think that we shouldn't get into the thing where we think that that we're going to do a master plan to kill the act. And I think that there's concern about that on a lot of sides, right? I'm not saying you. I'm just saying there are some people who feel that, you know, if we change this, we're going to be allowing massive development in the Highlands. That's obviously something we can't do. But I do think the more information we have to address the needs of people who live in that area, the more information we have, it doesn't hurt anything. And if we have a stronger argument for our legislators, who, you know, some of them are in areas that reap the benefits of the Highlands, but they're not going to do anything to add to the cost of the water in their area, even though it's costing the municipality to produce that water for them, if you will. Right? So more information is always a good thing, because if it strengthens our argument to do something for this, and you live in one of those towns, against, right? So if it strengthens the argument, if nothing else, to compensate the towns, because they're losing those revenues, and you know how your taxes are going up, right? So, you know, certain things are outside the cap, and, you know, if you have an emergency appropriation because you can't make the year, that comes out of your budget the following year, right? So,
One of the things to consider, too, is the way that land is assessed, how it's taxed. I'll give you an example. Where I live in West Milford, we have 18,000 acres that are owned by Newark Watershed, and the development rights have been taken away, which is good, you know, to preserve that land. But it's assessed on its potential to be developed, not on the revenue that they get from that land for their watershed. They sell the water to 22 other municipalities. So as an example, if you have an acre of land and you're paying $1,000, it's a vacant piece of land, and you discover oil on it, and you're making millions, you're still going to pay $1,000, so long as you don't build anything on it. Because it's assessed on its development value, not on revenue value. And that's something that I hope the state will eventually look into, because it's unfair.
Are there any more comments or suggestions for Steve?
Just one thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
Since it was brought up just a minute ago, maybe, Rob, you want to update people on the resolution that we're looking at in August?
Sure. And then add to us leave, unfortunately, for work responsibilities. We have put together the committee a very thorough analysis of water use in the region. And our basic premise is that the cost of water in most people's bills is not accurately reflected in their bill. The water bill reflects the cost to get the water from point A to point B, but it doesn't reflect any of the cost to preserve the land on top of it to keep it clean. And approach of using a water fee to try to capture some of the cost, and part of the cost of keeping that water clean is taking the land and its development rights away from these individuals who show up month after month and sit on the side of the room as a justification for trying to charge a more equitable rate so that these folks can be compensated. We've also developed what we think is not a full compensation value, but a fair deal for most folks, and we hope to put that in the form of a resolution to advance to the legislature to try to encourage them to address this in a substantive way. Chairman Ryan and I have spoken about this. We're trying to work. He and I are a few feet apart on how this will come together, so we're going to try to come together and understand that the whole council can hopefully approve unanimously. I think this is one of the few things on which everyone here agrees is that these folks deserve some compensation for the fact that the land was indicted by the signing of this act.
Go ahead. How do you know how much money you have to collect?
Well, we use the $64,000 price tag for the HTC credits. Every property has been assigned a credit value. That credit value has been studied at length, and no one really disputes the $64,000. It's a fairly good number, and we've also been able to allocate credits to all of the properties. No one really disputes the allocation. So that's how much those credits are worth, and that's the mechanism we're using. Now, we're not going to offer the full 64, we're not going to offer the 16 that we use for the compensation program we have now, but it's sort of a fair number. That's conceptually what we're looking at.
Thank you for that update.
That's right, Mr. Gill.
Steve's here from California, last chance to ask him live.
I'll be a better luck with him.
I do too.
We'll have better luck leaving Oregon and transferring from O'Hare. I'm sure it'll work. Any other questions? Council members? All right. Steve, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate you taking your time. Council members, any other business to come before the council tonight?
You have to open to the public session.
Thank you. Yes. Wouldn't want to not hear Hank and Mr. Schultz.
Hank's trying to do it again. We're trying to get out of here without him.
Yeah, I'm going to get a reputation for running a late meeting. We will open the.
Just his bonus because he runs a lot.
We will open the public portion of the meeting. 3 minute comments. Hank, you want to start?
Well, if somebody else wants to go.
Go ahead. Everyone's going to get a chance. Your name for the record.
That was a very interesting synopsis presented by Steve here. In my way of Ed Plump, I'm a farmer. I own 150 acres of preservation. The question that I have, and that I'll supply all of you with a piece of white paper with a red crayon, and all you got to do is draw a pyramid. And just start at the top and just bring the red line down. And that's where we are. So it's as simple as that. So anyway, the land value, which was brought up here several times, is the crust of the Highlands, because the Highlands Regional Master Plan is about the land. It's not about the real estate. Now, they have not been able to segregate the housing part or the real estate, or however you want to say it, from the land value. The land value is where the problem is. It's zero. In a preservation area, it's zero. In a planning area, it is. Now, it's roughly 900,000 acres. Half of it's in a preservation area, half it's in a planning area. I mean, for an example, Mr. Holloway brought up a good question is, for an example, take my farm. I got 150 acres. We're in a preservation area. Before the act passed, I live in Tewksbury. 3-acre lots were sold. One of the things I should say in the beginning is we're farmers. We never wanted to sell. We could have wallpapered our barn with all the offers that we had, but we never wanted to do that. We continued to farm and farm and farm. That was our, and it still is to this very day. But without the cost and the land value, it's very difficult to continue. But here's my point, which you had brought up, is take 150 acres before the act, divided by 3, right, times, that would give you 50 building lots. In Tewksbury, that was the zoning at the time, right? And at the time, in Tewksbury, lots were selling between 200,000 and 250. That's as fast as you could make it. But if you take that figure, which we're all looking at today, that's over $12 million. It's gone. It's gone forever. It's never going to return. Not to any of our forms, because it was political, and that's what the sign says. But before something like this should have been passed, there should have been funding in place to compensate before you. I mean, it's as simple as that. And that's what we're all beating ourselves up about. And it's a shame that this has to happen like this. But I got 16 seconds in. I wanted to thank, you already left, but for the land equity stuff, I really appreciate that, because that's, you did say 64,000, right?
That's what we use.
Yeah, that's a good number. That would make everybody whole, I'll tell you that. So. All right, my time's up. Thank you very much. I appreciate all the work that's done, but it's a simple thing. It's about the land. It's not the real. Everything he talks about is real estate. You guys don't get it. Well, maybe you do.
Fortunately, we're not the ones that need to get it. Right? It's a legislature.
Well, you hired this guy.
No more Q&A.
Okay, bye-bye.
Another, yes. To lose a quorum to close the meeting, so better call it back.
Julia Summers, New Jersey Highlands Coalition. I'll be quick. My colleague Elliot Ruger and I recently had an opportunity to sit down with the mayor of Jersey City and with one of his deputy mayors. And as a result of that conversation, I understand the conversations have begun with your staff about Jersey City, the potential for it becoming a receiving zone for TDR credits. We explained to them that, in essence, they had already transferred it for the development rights because they have the water up here and they've done all the development and continue to do all the development in Jersey City. It made a tremendous amount of sense for them to be talking to you about this. And we hope that a lot comes of that conversation. The second thing I wanted to talk about is thank you very much for the land preservation status report. We were really looking for that and we really appreciate that. That is an important update. The third thing is to say thank you to Chris Dax. She's really a class act, and I'm glad everybody stood to recognize her, or almost everybody stood to recognize her. We really thank you very much for what you have done with a big chunk of your professional life that you have given to the Highlands. Personally, I think you made a huge difference, and the Highlands thanks you.
Thank you. Anybody else? Mr. Schoen, floor is yours.
My name is David Schoen, and I have a farm in the Highlands Preservation Area. And it's quite, really quite amazing how experts can muddle the obvious. The smaller the unit, the higher the per unit cost. That's the way it is, whether it be land or peanuts. It's all the same. The smaller the unit, the higher the per unit cost. And the first part of his presentation where he did a job analysis, the job analysis should have also included the population analysis that goes along with it. If the population goes down and the jobs stay essentially the same, it proves that the people who stayed still had jobs. It does not talk about what really happened to the jobs in the region. Multifamily housing, it's not allowed up here, and it was generally not allowed by the towns before the Highlands Act. So to talk about multifamily housing here, we barely know what it looks like. And when the subject of equalized value came up, there was no assessment that I've seen to date that considers the what I call the residual value or latent value of farmland that is farmland and gets farmland assessment versus when toll road buys it. And that is assessed at an entirely different value as the use changes. I don't know why this stuff is so hard to get through. It's obvious. And you just burn it in an amount of irrelevant data, and you get whatever number you want. And really what I'm hearing, and I hear it more and more from elected officials in this area, is what I'm calling essentially what New Jersey has. They have a terminal disease called NIMBYism. It's terminal NIMBYism, and this is yet another manifestation of it to make sure that it happens. It will kill the state. It already well on its way. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Anybody else? Public comments? No, we'll close the public comment portion. Motion to adjourn. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Motion carried. By Pete.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Great job.